I'm often asked by people I study with, why doesn't God just perform a bunch of miracles today and prove that He exists once and for all? Why doesn't God just do some grand gesture up in the sky to let everybody on planet Earth know that He's still there, that He's real, and that we ought to believe in Him and obey Him? I wonder if that actually plays out. When the Bible presents miracles, and it presents plenty of them, does it play out that everybody who gets to see miracles in the Bible ends up believing in God and obeying Him? That seeing a miracle was all that they needed once and for all to submit to God's will? I want to talk about miracles and belief today. What would it take for you to believe in God? Are you asking for a miracle? Are you asking for a sign? I wonder what God's answer might be to that request. Let's start in the book of Exodus. And we're going to be reading in Exodus 14. I know that this is not usually how I do things, but I want to read a rather extended section of text. I want to let the story speak for itself. And I'll skip around a little bit, and I'll let you know when I do, just for the sake of time. But let's begin in Exodus 14 and verse 5. A grand miracle, to be sure. When the king of Egypt was told that the people of Israel had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, "What have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services." Of course, you know, knowing the story of the Exodus, that this is after the 10 plagues. Moses has finally gotten Pharaoh to agree to let the people of Israel go, to leave Egypt. And the Egyptians are happy to see them go as well. So he had his chariot made ready, and he took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots, along with all the other chariots of Egypt, with officers all over them. Verse 10. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there was no grave in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt?" Verse 12. "Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'?" By the way, I don't remember that part anywhere in the book of Exodus. "It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." So Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance of the Lord. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them. And I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen." Verse 21. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. The Egyptians pursued them, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed after them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud, and during the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army, and He threw it into confusion. He jammed the wheels of their chariot so that they had difficulty driving, and the Egyptians said, "Let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen." And in verse 27, Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea went back to its place. The Egyptians were fleeing toward it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, with a wall of water on their right and on their left. That day the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. When the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses his servant. And that's the happy ending of the book of Exodus, isn't it? And from that day forward, the Israelites never had a faith problem ever again. They believed in the Lord continually and obeyed his servant Moses in everything that he asked them to do every single day in the wilderness until they reached the promised land in glory. Isn't that how the story went? Yeah, if you're not remembering the book of Exodus like that either, then that's okay, because that's not how it turned out. Miracles are, at least in part, the basis for God's authority. But witnessing a miracle is not the only thing that God offers you. And witnessing a miracle is also not our place to ask from God. When God was preparing to give his law to the Israelites some days after the events of the Red Sea, he actually turned to the miraculous Exodus as confirmation of his authority to give the law. You'll notice that in Exodus chapter 19, verses 3 through 8, and in Exodus chapter 20, beginning in verse 2, that God goes back to the escape from Egypt in establishing the basis for his authority as lawgiver. And perhaps it was because it was a very recent event. It was a very tangible event. It was a very tangible display of his power. They saw the sea on the right and on the left. They saw the Egyptian army consumed by the waters and destroyed. They saw the dead bodies float up. They saw the dead bodies on the seashore. So this event would be very fresh in the minds of every Israelite man and woman. But miracles continued to be one method of establishing God's authority throughout the Bible. God showed his approval of prophets and judges through miracles and wonders as well. Gideon in Judges chapter 6, God did miracles for Gideon to confirm what he had commanded him to do. Samson in Judges chapter 15 through 16. Samuel in 1 Samuel chapter 1 and in 1 Samuel chapter 12 and verse 18. Elijah and the drought in Israel, 1 Kings chapter 17 through 18. Daniel and his ability to interpret dreams in the book of Daniel, just to name a few examples. In all of those stories, God used miracles to confirm that he had the authority to command people what to do. I mean, the logic is sound, isn't it? If I'm going to tell you how to live, then I'd better back it up with something, right? If I'm going to claim to be a prophet of God, if I'm going to claim to be a judge of God, if I'm going to claim to be a lawgiver of God, then I need to back it up with some kind of confirmation. Otherwise, I could just show up and tell all of you what to do, and you just, well, have to do it because I said so. But no, with men like Moses and Elijah and Samuel and others, God confirmed his authority to command using miracles. In all of these examples and many more, he was confirming and validating his authority. Miracles were never just thrown out willy-nilly in the Bible. Miracles also weren't just thrown out for people's curiosity. You don't have examples in the Bible of people saying, I wonder if there's a God up there, and God goes, but I'm here, really, I'm here, I promise, watch what I can do. Miracles are not about satisfying curiosity. And miracles are also not about solving all of humanity's problems. Or else God would have miraculously healed every illness and every injury and every disease and every malady by this point, don't you think? Miracles are not about solving mankind's problems. Throughout the Bible, from the beginning to the end, miracles are used to confirm God's authority to command mankind's submission. We obey God because He has the power and authority over this universe. This truth is even more evident in the ministry of Jesus, during which time He provided miraculous evidence of His authority practically every single day of His ministry. The book of Mark in particular starts out very strong with a number of stories about the miracles. If you want a great book that just kind of pounds you, example after example after example of the miraculous power of Jesus, start with Mark. Of course, they're all wonderful, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But the point of the book of Mark is to emphasize in a very condensed way the power that Jesus had. In just the first two or three chapters alone, you have miracle after miracle after miracle in Mark's narrative. His closest disciples also manifested miraculous power. In Matthew chapter 10 and verse 1, and in Mark chapter 6 and verse 13, it says that His disciples had the power over demons and diseases to cure and to heal people. In fact, it was to the frequency of miraculous activity that Jesus pointed when the disciples of John the Baptist came to Him and said, "Are you the expected one? Are you the one that we have been looking for?" Go to Luke chapter 7. And notice in Luke chapter 7, beginning in verse 18. "And the disciples of John reported to Him about all these things. And summoning two of His disciples, John sent them to the Lord, saying, 'Are you the expected one, or do we look for someone else?' And when the men had come to Him, they said, 'John the Baptist has sent us to you, saying, Are you the expected one, or do we look for someone else?' And at that very time," in verse 21, "He cured many people of diseases and afflictions and evil spirits, and He granted sight to many who were blind. And He answered and said to them," in verse 22, "Go and report to John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them, and blessed is he who keeps from stumbling over me." Jesus was not performing miracles just to help people. Now, the miracle certainly did help people. But Jesus wasn't performing miracles just because He was a walking hospital. He wasn't performing miracles just because He was a humanitarian. He was performing miracles to confirm that He was the Christ and that He had authority. And when John the Baptist's disciple said, "Are you the one we've been waiting for?" Jesus said, "All you need to do is look at the miracles, and you have your answer." So are miracles a reason to believe or to scoff? Even though the Bible reads like a fantasy novel to many skeptics, with a miracle seemingly on every single page, we need to remember that the Bible actually has relatively few miracles. And you're going, If you just read the Bible cover to cover, yes, I understand, there seems to be a lot of miracles. There's a miracle on almost every page. There's a miracle in almost every chapter. I understand that. There's a lot of miracles as the Bible presents it. But you have to remember, the Bible is a condensed history that covers thousands and thousands of years. And there are great periods of time in the Bible where not a single miracle is mentioned at all. And if you think of it in those terms, then miracles are actually relatively infrequent in the Bible. There might seem to be a great many miracles, but consider that it is a collection of books written over many centuries, covering many thousands of years. Consider the first few chapters of Genesis just by themselves. When we're reading in the book of Genesis, you have to remember that there are perhaps several thousand years of history going on there, without nary a miracle to be found, except perhaps for Cain receiving his mark in Genesis chapter 4, and verse 15, and Enoch's peculiar and particular departure from life. But those are the only two almost miracles that are mentioned for several thousand years until Noah comes along. You don't read of any miracles at all during the time of Noah's life before God talked to him. His father, lived for almost 1,000 years. His father's father lived for almost 1,000 years. Adam lived for over 900 years. There are several thousand years of history between Cain and Noah without any miraculous activity mentioned at all in the Bible. There are great swaths of time in 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Samuel, where no miracles are mentioned. There are great swaths of time in different periods of the Bible where there are no miracles mentioned. I don't imagine a whole lot of miracles were going on near the end of the book of Judges. Because at the end of the book of Judges, everybody was doing what was right in his own eyes. And some of the things that the people were doing at the end of the book of Judges were pretty horrible. And you don't read a lot of miracles in the book of Judges aside from Gideon and Samson. There were 400 years between the end of the Old Testament and the beginning of the New Testament. No miracles going on then. You have to remember that even though it seems like there's a lot of miracles in the Bible is a condensed history, and when you put that into play, there really have not been a lot of miracles that have happened in human history, which is the reason why miracles are so astounding and so provocative when they do happen. This is an important point. It's an important point because this means that the Bible is not asking us to believe in just anything and everything. The Bible is not asking us to believe in every televangelist and every huckster and every swindler who comes along with a big tent and an organ player. The Bible is not asking us to be gullible or stupid. The Bible is saying when a real miracle happens, you know it. And there is no confusing a real miracle with the swindlers and charlatans of the world. The Bible is not asking us to be gullible and to believe just everything. The Bible presents miracles as real, confirmable events that stand out from everything else. And even during the time of Exodus, before the Red Sea crossing, you have to remember, the wizards in the kingdom of Egypt were able to do some pretty impressive things as well. They went tit for tat with Moses and Aaron for a while. But even the wizards and magicians of Egypt found to a point where they couldn't keep up with what Moses and Aaron were doing by the power of God. There is a difference between miracles and everything else. Which leads us to our next point. Are there miracles today? Let's keep in mind our main points that we've made up to now. The Bible does not present miracles as just being a humanitarian effort by God. Miracles are not humanitarian aid. Miracles are not presented in the Bible as God's solution for all of mankind's problems. Miracles are relatively infrequent in the Bible. And miracles happen to confirm God's authority when presenting revelation, to confirm His authority to command our obedience. So do miracles happen today? And am I allowed to ask God for a miracle to prove that He's real? I want to believe in God. I have some evidence philosophically to believe in God. But until God does a miracle and proves it, I'm not going to believe. The first thing I want to make clear is, let's be really careful about using the word miracle. Okay? Sometimes we throw around the word miracle very casually. The miracle of childbirth. It was a miracle. I had a relative pass away, some distant relative who I didn't even know, and he left some money in his will for me. It was such a miracle. I needed that money at the time. You know what? My response to stuff like that is there ever a bad time to find out that you were in somebody's will? You know, it's almost like that we have this confirmation process where we're like, it was a miracle. I needed that money right then and right there. And God miraculously gave it to me in this. Well, it's like, I don't know about you, but 365 days a year, I could sure use a little extra money. Childbirth is not a miracle. We like to say that the miracle of childbirth is not a miracle. No matter how unlikely it is, no matter the odds against it, childbirth under any and every circumstance is not a miracle. What's the definition of a miracle? A miracle is something that cannot happen within the normal laws of this physical world. Not something that's improbable, not something that's unlikely, not something that shouldn't have happened that way, but a miracle is something that literally cannot happen within the normal laws of this physical world. So a lot of the things that we say are miracles aren't really miracles. They might be improbabilities. They might be highly unlikely. But they're not miracles. We will find in the Bible that there is no other reason for miracles than confirming God's authority in some matter. The power of the Holy Spirit is not used to satisfy curiosity. And it would cease to be perpetuated then at the close of new revelation. No new revelation means no need for more miracles. That's why you had a lot of miracles around the time that God gave the law at Mount Sinai. That's why you had a lot of miracles at the time that Christ brought the new covenant in the first century. And that's why you have almost no miracles, or very few miracles, in between those time periods. If miracles are there to confirm God's authority, to command something of us, and if God is not commanding something new, then there's no reason for miracles anymore. Well, you're wondering, are there Bible verses that illustrate this? Are there Bible verses that corroborate this? Hebrews chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. After the gospel was first spoken through the Lord, the writer says, it was confirmed to us by those who heard, God also bearing witness with them both by signs and wonders and by various miracles and by gifts of the Holy Spirit according to His own will. So according to the writer of Hebrews, why did miracles happen? What's the explanation that the writer of Hebrews says? He says, miracles were used to confirm the revelation of Jesus Christ. That when Jesus Christ came and said, I'm preaching the kingdom of God, I'm preaching the good news of salvation, I've brought a new covenant with me, everybody said, prove it. And Jesus said, okay. And the miracles validated, they confirmed, they proved the new revelation that Christ brought in the new covenant. Hebrews 2 verses 3 and 4, I think is a key passage here. When you're talking about miracles today, do we see visions? Do we predict the future? Does God miraculously heal us in a giant stadium with Benny Hinn? Hebrews chapter 2, verses 3 and 4 is a key passage. But beyond that, Mark 16, verse 20 says, and they went out and preached everywhere while the Lord worked with them and confirmed the word by signs that followed. What was the point of the signs that followed? Again, was it just humanitarian effort? Was it just to be nice? Was it to satisfy curiosity? What was the point of the signs and wonders? It was to confirm the message they were preaching. That's it. To confirm God's revelation. To confirm His authority. Acts chapter 14, verse 3. Therefore they spent a long time there speaking boldly with reliance upon the Lord, who was bearing witness to the word of His grace, granting that signs and wonders be done by their hands. Again, what was the purpose of the signs and wonders being done? It was to bear witness to the word of His grace. To bear witness that the word of His grace was real and valid and applicable. 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 12. The signs of a true apostle were performed among you with all perseverance by signs and wonders and miracles. These are the signs of a true apostle of God, that they can perform signs, wonders, and miracles. If you cannot perform signs, wonders, and miracles, you're not an apostle from God, and you do not have the authority to give new revelation. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. These and many other passages illustrate the point and the purpose of miracles. So again, do miracles happen today? I would ask you a question. Is there new revelation that needs to be confirmed today? Because if there is no new revelation from God, as in God is not adding things to the Bible, adding extra chapters, throwing in an appendix here and there, if there is nothing new that is being added to the Word of God, then there is no reason for miracles to occur. No new revelation means no need for confirmation by miracles. So, is there new revelation today? One verse answers your question. You want the simple answer? 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 3. One verse answers the question. Seeing that His divine power has granted to us everything pertaining to life and godliness through the true knowledge of Him who called us by His own glory and excellence. You want to know everything there is to know about life and godliness? You want to know everything there is to know that God has revealed, at least, about life and godliness? Well, God has granted to us everything pertaining to life and godliness. What that verse is saying is that there's nothing else you can add. If we know everything about life and godliness, if that has already been granted, if everything about life and godliness, and I take everything to be literally, everything about life and godliness or living a godly life, if it's already been granted, then you can't add anything else, right? What more could you be adding? In this book, I have everything there is to know about life and godliness. So there's nothing new that God could be saying to me. Nothing new that God could be adding. One more passage here. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 8 through 10. He says, love never fails, but if there are gifts of prophecy, they will be done away. And if there are tongues, as a miraculous ability to speak in different languages that you didn't know before, they will cease. And if there is knowledge, it will be done away. And again, I think he's talking about miraculous knowledge, the ability to know things. Like what Paul said at the beginning of the book of Galatians, in Galatians chapter 1, he said, when I received the gospel, I didn't receive it from other men. I didn't go to Jerusalem and learn it from Peter and the other apostles. I received it by revelation from God. It was miraculous knowledge that was granted to me outside the normal boundaries of how information is transmitted from person to person. So I think he means miraculous knowledge. If there is miraculous knowledge, it will be done away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when the perfect comes, the partial will be done away. And I think that what that verse is saying, I think really speaks a lot today too. Again, the Benny Hinns and the televangelists and the faith healers today. Miraculous abilities, he says, are going to be done away. You can't deny that. Honestly, I mean, anybody who believes in faith healing today has to read that verse and come to some kind of grips with the idea that the Apostle Paul said, if there's miraculous abilities, prophesying and tongue speaking and miraculous knowledge, it's going to be done away. It's going away. It's on its way out. It's being phased out. We're not going to do it anymore. I think you're going to have a real hard time having to come to grips with a verse like that if you still believe in miracles today, or at least the kind of miracles that we observe in the Bible. Our last point is this, that the power of miracles is not in observation, but in recollection. And what I mean by that is this. When you have somebody today who says, well, I'll believe in God when He shows me a miracle, I think God could show you all the miracles in the world and you probably still wouldn't believe in Him. Because the power of miracles is not an observation. Otherwise, why was Jesus crucified? Otherwise, why did Moses lead 2.5 million people through the wilderness for 40 years, whining and complaining and murmuring the whole way? Otherwise, why didn't people return to the Lord en masse after Elijah challenged the prophets of Baal? If the power of miracles is simply in observing them, of I see a miracle and I believe now, the Bible simply doesn't illustrate that. In fact, the Bible seems to be indicating that the opposite is true. That in miracle-saturated time periods, you actually have a lack of faith in people. In the wilderness wanderings, for example, they started off with the 10 plagues. They saw that in Egypt. They crossed the Red Sea on dry ground. They saw Mount Sinai and heard the voice of the Lord. The Lord led them by day, by a cloud and a pillar of fire by night. At the end of their wilderness wanderings, they said in recollection, in all those 40 years, our shoes never wore out. Our clothes didn't wear out. They had manna miraculously appear on the ground every single day. Bread from heaven When they wanted meat, quail showed up. When they were thirsty, they only needed to crack a rock open and water poured out. I will say this without hesitation. For 40 years, the Israelites literally saw miracles every single day. From simple things like their shoes not wearing out to big things like water coming out of rocks. They literally saw miracles every day for 40 years. And how many of that first generation of Israelites who left Egypt crossed the Jordan River into the Promised Land? Out of 600,000 Israelite men who left Egypt, two of them entered the Promised Land. Two of them! And they saw miracles every day for 40 years. So don't tell me that if God just did some fireworks in the sky, that all of a sudden you'd start believing in Him and obeying Him. Don't tell me that all you need is God to do parlor tricks and you'd become a faithful person. It doesn't work that way. In Deuteronomy chapter 11, notice verses 1 through 7. Deuteronomy chapter 11, verses 1 through 7. You shall love the Lord your God and always keep His charge, His statutes, His ordinances, and His commandments. And know this day that I am not speaking with your sons who have not known and who have not seen the discipline of the Lord your God, His greatness, His mighty hand, His outstretched arm, and His signs and His works which He did in the midst of Egypt to Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and to all his land, and what He did to Egypt's army, to its horses and its chariots when He made the water of the Red Sea to engulf them while they were pursuing you. And the Lord completely destroyed them. And what He did to you in the wilderness until you came to this place. And what He did to Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, the sons of Reuben. When the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them, their households, their tents, and every living thing that followed them. But your own eyes have seen all the great work of the Lord which He did. Your eyes saw it. You saw it. The power of the miracles was not felt in observing them, but in recollecting them. Keep reading in verses 18 and 19. You shall therefore impress these words of mine on your heart and your soul. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall teach them to your sons, talking to them when you sit in your house, when you walk along the road, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates, so that your days and the days of your sons may be multiplied in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers to give them. What's interesting about this passage is that it wasn't the sons who got to see the miracles. The sons didn't get to see the miracles. The children born in the wilderness during those 40 years, it wasn't them who got to see it. They didn't see the Red Sea. They weren't there for the 10 plagues. They didn't hear the voice of God at Mount Sinai. They didn't see those miracles. And yet were they expected to obey God nevertheless? People don't need to see a miracle to know that they must obey God. This generation did not get to see the miracles of their fathers and their grandfathers, but they were nevertheless expected by God to obey. We read earlier in our worship service Psalm 106. In Psalm 106, verses 6 through 14, the writer of this psalm laments the way the multitudes in the wilderness had all of the advantages and opportunities to believe, but lacked the resolve to remain faithful. They had miracles every day. They saw things in the wilderness that should have amazed anybody, but they didn't have faith. Because at the end of the day, it's not about miracles. It's not about miracles. It's about faith, my friends. So consider, that generation of Israelites literally saw miracles every day. Yet even this miracle-saturated generation lack genuine faith in God. And perhaps this is why when we read of Hebrews chapter 3, verses 7 through 15, of that generation, that the writer of Hebrews doesn't offer additional miraculous evidence. He doesn't talk about how many more miracles we need, or how many more miracles maybe could have saved them, or how many more miracles God could have done to build up their faith. No, the writer of Hebrews doesn't talk about needing more miracles. No, the writer of Hebrews just laments and speaks of a sobering reminder of the disbelief of a truly privileged generation of people. They had all the miracles in the world and they did not believe. You get to read in the Bible about all the miracles in the world. Will you believe? Can you do any better than a generation of people who had every opportunity and every advantage but squandered it? Can you do better than that generation now? It's time to believe in God, to believe in His Son, and to believe that He has the power to save you from your sins. Whatever need you might have, please come forward as we stand and sing.